I'm Ken MacLeod, and welcome to these retreat teachings on the Pointing Out Instructions. Many different topics and texts are covered in this 9-part series. We touch on practices ranging from shamatha to guru yoga, and on various texts, including Aspirations for Mahamudra, One Sentence Pith Instructions, and Recognizing Mind as Guru. You may find it helpful to follow along using copies of these texts that are available on my website, unfetteredmind.org. And now, part one of Pointing Out Instructions. Welcome to you all. Rob, can I get some water?
Sure.
Many of you have come quite far to be here, and many of you I'm meeting in the flesh for the first time. Some of you have met me innumerable times, but I haven't met you. By that I mean the podcast, which has become quite interesting. So I always, you know all my jokes. So you actually know me much better than if you just read the book. It's a little strange. but I'm very glad you're able to be here and you're interested in being here. All of you have considerable experience with practice or you wouldn't be here. So this is not a beginner's retreat in any way, shape, or form. There's a pretty wide range of backgrounds, but that's fine. What is most important, I found, is that we all have the same intention, and I feel quite confident about that because many of you I've talked with one way or another, or I've looked over why you're interested in coming to this retreat. Has everybody here actually met each other? No? Okay, that's good.
Lots of people.
Okay, so at the end we'll probably go around and everybody can give their name and serial number and so forth. This is probably going to be more of the one of the more unstructured retreats you've participated in, and that's quite deliberate. For several reasons. One, you're all experienced practitioners, and many of the formal practice environments that were developed in Asia were developed for some reasons that are not obvious to the naked eye. For instance, in Rinzai, and to a lesser extent in Soto Zen, you have the Jiga Jitsu who walks around waking people up with a few slaps of a stick. Where did this very interesting ritual come from? Well, in the early days of Zen in Japan, particularly Rinzai, is very closely associated with the samurai and the nobility. the monasteries were effectively the prep schools for the sons of the nobility. So what do you do with teenagers who can't sit still? But because it was Japanese society, everybody had to be treated exactly the same. So that's how it developed. I don't think we need to treat everybody as the teenagers, the aristocrats. Probably not necessary. Another reason is that some of you will have a chance to explore meditating on your own intensively here. Others of you will prefer group meditation. This is the meditation hall. Here the meditation will be structured. There'll be half-hour periods
Between 30 to 40 minute periods, basically, adjusting for qigong, punctuated by periods of qigong. I need to go over the qigong. How many of you do not know the qigong practices? Okay, so we need to do that this evening, and we'll also have another session on that tomorrow afternoon after the Han. So there'll be qigong at about 3:30. Yeah, that'll be right. So here, qigong in here at 3:30. The reason we use the qigong is that we found it works much better to balance energy than walking meditation. It's not the only method, but we found it very useful, and it's a very useful support for people's practice on their own. Another practice which I will encourage you to do is sky gazing, which is, the Dzogchen boys like to say that's our practice. But it actually comes up in the Prajnaparamita, or the perfection of wisdom, and Madhyamaka as well. I'll go over instruction for that, probably not this evening. Because of the way the weather works here, the best time to do this is in the morning, either in the early morning or in the between breakfast and lunch. By 11 o'clock, 11:30, clouds are beginning to form in the sky, and by the afternoon there's usually clouds, and then we'll get intermittent rains. Thunder shower cells will just form at random, and as you may have noticed, coming here it's actually quite green. This is the first year they've had proper monsoons in about 8 or 10 years, which is. But they can come up very quickly, and they also can be quite violent, as Gabe was saying. And then sometimes we'll get beautiful rainbows afterwards, if everything's situated. So it's very nice. So that's why we have. When you first get up, there's a period of meditation which is you can practice with people in here, or you can practice in your rooms, or you can practice outside as you wish. If you are going to practice outside, this is something that we had last year, which we didn't have to the same extent before. Have a large ground sheet, because there's these nasty little things called chiggers, which burrow into your skin and bite and things like that. And does anybody here have nail polish? We're so glad. See, John, you get chiggers, because what you have to do is... Pardon?
It's not red.
Oh, that's great. you paint it over the place where the chiggers are, and it suffocates them. It's the best way. Otherwise, they get in there and it can turn septic, and it's just a mess. Insect repellents are effective for it. I have a good insect repellent, but I don't know how it is with chiggers with me, so if anybody wants that, they can borrow it. But if you have a large ground sheet, then they can't really get at you. But if you're sitting in the grass or something, it could be a problem. First years, we didn't have that at all. I don't know what changed. We have that now. And if you are meditating outside, good to wear a headgear, because the sun is extremely strong at this altitude. And also to wear a sunblock, even if you're sitting in the shade. Make sure you wear a sunblock, because the ultraviolet is also quite strong. Do people have sunblock here? Yeah, good. Okay. And take water with you. And then we'll meet, I think it's at 7 o'clock, is that right? Yeah. We'll meet here for a half hour of group meditation, followed by the morning ritual. And these are the chat booklets, which we can distribute now. There's a limited number of these. If you lose them, you're out of luck. So take good care of them, please. Now, in the chat booklet, you'll see, actually, there's a lot more here.
Do you need one more?
You need one more?
Yes, no, just one more.
Okay. We have the morning ritual, which is what we'll be doing at 7:30. In the morning ritual, you see one of them is the mountain offering ritual. this is a burnt offering, so we need someone to light the charcoal and take this outside. And I don't think I have my Bic lighter. Does anybody have a Bic lighter? Good. Thank you, Nick. You may need it just to light the charcoal each morning. So we need a volunteer to take care of that each day. Forgot to tell you about that one. Claudia didn't tell you about that one?
What's that?
Claudia didn't tell me about that one?
Yes, she did. And I put the sheet together. I figure I end up doing it.
Okay. Evening ritual, another group of prayers. We won't be doing all of them. We'll alternate between the aspirations for Mahamudra and ever-present Buddha's prayer of intention, alternating that each evening. Then you'll see there's a third section called teachings. And here I put together a number of different prayers and teachings, all of which pertain to what we're doing here. Some of these are from the Kagyu tradition, some of them are from Dzogchen, some of them the Manifesting Absolute Reality is Dogen, a very famous teaching from Zen tradition. Verses on the Faith Mind is a beautiful poem from the Chinese tradition. And One Sentence Pith Instructions from the Third Karmapa. And All the Matter in the World is a Pointing Out Instruction from the Nyingma tradition in Tibet. All of this is to flesh out and give you different approaches to the kind of matter that we're going to be dealing with over the next 10 days. And finally, you'd see in the supplemental practices, or supplementary practices, there are three things. One is a guru yoga that I actually wrote, it's a little bit of an exaggeration, put together from other pieces. It's focused on Sukha Siddhi, who is the woman that you see on the cover. Sukha Siddhi is one of the principal teachers in the Shankha tradition in which I was trained, and has been a source of inspiration for many, many people over the centuries, actually a student of mine who now lives in Las Vegas, New Mexico, asked me to write this put together because he wanted to use it as a basis of his practice, but many people do this. And since Guru Yoga is part of Mahamudra practice or one approach to Mahamudra, I wanted to include at least one Guru Yoga practice for those of you who wanted to do it in a formal way. I'll talk more about that later in the retreat. Then there's verses to keep in mind when you go to sleep, and also some offering prayers for offering food, which you can learn and use. We're not going to be doing that formally together, but I've included it for your for those of you who want something like that. Another thing is that for tomorrow, I want you to observe silence from this evening up until the end of lunch. And then tomorrow afternoon we have off completely, so if you want to talk and socialize a bit, that's fine. And then after the teaching period in the evening, we'll go into silence for the next, basically the next week, 8 days. I'd like to conduct this retreat in silence. Those of you, when you're doing cleanup duty, there may be some functional talking necessary, like, please put this here or something like that. But keep it to an absolute minimum. After you've done a cleanup 2 or 3 days, you know, everybody will know the routine, so we won't need that. If you need to talk to Ralph about anything, personal needs, etc., as much as possible, do that through notes. If you're being bitten by a rattlesnake, then please talk to him. Of course, the interviews and Q&As during teaching sessions, we can talk ordinarily. But when you refrain from speaking, you'll find that you come into much more dynamic contact, connection with your internal material, because we dissipate a tremendous amount of energy and able to distract ourselves a great deal from what is arising inside just by talking. And when we stop talking, then somebody does something, we have to say something, but now we have to feel all those feelings, so it's very useful. And I'd like you to continue that in your rooms. It's very tempting just to, you know, relax, talk to your roommate. I'd ask you not to do that. Ralph's tried to allocate the rooms in such a way that, you know, it'll be as simple and as straightforward as possible. So the quality of the retreat depends a great deal to the extent to which you practice silence. It does amplify the intensity of the retreat, but again, you're all experienced practitioners, so I think it's fine to provide that additional element to work with. I think you'll find that your minds are just quieter because of the silence. During the long periods of meditation where you're on your own, which are the mornings and the afternoons, if you're meditating in here, then I ask you to observe the timings and the qigong, and just so there's a sense of practicing together. If you're practicing on your own, you do this as you see fit. Some of you may find it best to appear to practice and then go for a walk for 10 minutes or half an hour or whatever, and then do another period of practice. This I'm going to leave entirely up to you. This isn't about sitting rigidly for hours and hours on end. And I'm going to talk more about that in just a few minutes. But it's for you to explore really being present in a way that feels natural to you. I'm going to trust you to make your own efforts here. I'm not quite deliberately not creating an environment where the structure is something that's enforced or imposed on you, because that's not how we live. We all have to take responsibility for our own practice in the world, so we take responsibility for our own practice here. You know what you have to meet inside. You know the internal material. If you have difficulty meeting that, that is what the subject matter of the interviews are. Usually when I've done retreats here, because of the length of the retreats, I've seen people every other day, but I've chosen this time to see all of you every day for two reasons. One is so that, I suppose three reasons. The first is so that you have the opportunity to ask questions about challenges, questions that come up about in your practice, or insights or experiences that arise, because often people want to say, well, man, this is happening, but doesn't mean anything, or how do I work with it, and so forth. So that's the first thing, to give you a regular opportunity to pose bring up questions, challenges, or insights. The second is, and that includes stuff coming up from internal material, I found consistently that if people have the opportunity to talk about their experience in meditation, then things can be fine-tuned progressively rather than building up into big problems and imbalances, which then take a lot more work. So this I found has been quite fruitful in the past. Second is that we're going to be doing, we're going to be working from this book, Clarifying the Natural State. You don't have to have it, I think many of you probably do. The reason I've chosen this one, and there are many good books on Mahamudra, is that it's set up as a series of pointing out instructions, starting with pointing out how to let the mind rest, and then how to look, and then how to join those two together, and so forth. And though it says in the book, well, you know, give them this instruction and then let them work on it for a few days, etc., well, we're just going to go through this one thing after another each evening. This means that, and so the second reason for the interviews is so that you can bring up any experiences that are coming from your work with the pointing out instructions, and that can be clarified, and hopefully your skill and ability and practice developing consistently through the course of the retreat. And the third reason for the interviews is that it makes you accountable for your practice. Because what have you been doing? Oh, smelling the flowers. Watching the cattle. So the next thing I want to talk about is the nature of practice. Basically, you have to learn how to work very hard at doing nothing. And this is not very easy. The Mahamudra instruction is very simple. One of the Mahamudra instructions, one set of Mahamudra instructions is no distraction, no control, no work. Doesn't leave you with a lot to do. What has become clear to me over the years is that Mahamudra and all of the direct awareness practices consist of making what's a relatively subtle effort to bring the mind or attention or you, whatever you want to say, into some form of presence, and then resting. And the actual power of practice comes through resting, and the more completely you're able to rest, the deeper and the more powerful your practice becomes. And that's one of the reasons why I'm setting up a relatively unstructured schedule, so that each of you can explore your own way of resting deeply. Now, this resting doesn't mean going to sleep. It means being able to rest and be awake, but really rest in being awake. Now, how many of you know the story of the princess and the pea? Okay. Anybody not familiar with that story? Well, it's a fairy tale. I can't remember all the details, but I think this... prince is looking for a princess to marry. And he's told by a wise old woman that the only way to find out who a proper princess is to put a pea under 100 mattresses. And so he invites one woman over after another and sleeps on this bed. Eventually one woman says, "I couldn't sleep at all last night, just black and blue. That was the lumpiest bed I've ever had." And so this is the true princess, because she can feel the pee under 100 mattresses. Now, there are additional elements to that story, but the main point here that I bring it up is that when you actually rest, then you feel all the stuff that prevents you from resting more deeply. And it just brings you right into connection with it. This is not comfortable. You're like the princess, you get black and blue. But Mahamudra practice and the direct awareness practice in general consists primarily of learning how to rest deeply, at first with and eventually in one's internal material. And this is found also in the Theravadin tradition, in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, and particularly in the Full Awareness of Breathing Sutra, in which the breath is used as a way of coming to that deep resting. So, but one has to be awake in this. That's very, very important. If the mind is drowsy or dull or unclear, then you're just sitting in a dull state, and that's not helpful at all. So, for this reason, often when people are starting this kind of practice, they're encouraged to practice for relatively short periods, so that the mind is constantly being woken up, is fresh and awake. So even if you're practicing in a group, you may start doing this just resting completely for like literally a minute or two, and then relaxing, and then resting again for a minute or two, a minute longer. So that constantly fresh and awake mind, and learning how to rest in that. And you may find that it works better for you to practice for half an hour and then go for a walk for 10 or 15 minutes, come back, practice again for half an hour. This is what I want you to explore. That the quality that I want you to keep exploring is this quality of resting. And you begin to find that quality of resting in your sitting meditation. I want you to take that quality of resting into simple activities, such as walking. How can you rest in the same way walking? Eating. We won't have to worry about conversation, but eventually we take it into that, and you actually learn to do everything in this clear, awake, resting mind. And that provides a very, very good basis for the looking quality, which is also what we're going into with Mahamudra. So that's the reason why I've set up the schedule the way it is. And as I say, for many of you, this may be a very unstructured retreat, so you may find yourself like, where are the boundaries? But rather than a tight schedule and rigid meditation and things like that, which can be very helpful, this is the way I want you to develop these kinds of abilities. It's going to involve knowing yourself and coming to know yourself in a different way and a much deeper way, and that'll be very helpful. Any questions on anything I've said so far? How many of you are totally intimidated? Randy, really? Say more.
Yeah.
And this reminded me of another component that I'd forgotten to talk about. Did you have your hand up, Kim?
I did.
Yes.
I want to ask about reading.
Yes, that's basically where I was going to go to next.
Okay.
Actually, the less reading you do, the better. And the reason for that is that letting the eyes rest allows the mind to rest. And so if you don't read, you'll find that your eyes rest in a way that you're really not used to, because we're not used to it in this society. And that can be quite helpful. So if you don't need to read other than prayers and things like that, then I would encourage that.
Okay, well, in my case, I listen, I have recordings. But do you suggest that it's better not to bring in, maybe I have a book, a document, a text that I brought along. Okay? Late at night, I like to read before I fall asleep.
Worst time to read. For the purposes of this practice, very definitely the worst time to read,
yeah,
because it generates tension in the eyes. And what I want you to do is to go to sleep awake.
Yeah.
That'll be very good practice. And it'll be very unfamiliar to many of you. And people say, okay, I don't read, I've got all this spare time, what do I do? Well, you practice doing nothing at all. That's what you do. And what is that like? Just doing nothing. And what is it Minkin says? We do our best to avoid reality, but there it is, calmly licking its chops.
Minkin?
Pardon?
Minkin? Who was that?
Yeah.
Said that?
Yeah, I've got the quotation in my commentary on the Heart Sutra, which I have with me. I'll dig it up. That's not precise, but yeah, you know, avoid the believing in things or something like that, but then that is reality, calmly licking its chops. So, that's how it is. So you're going to deal with a lot of stuff that you spent all of your life avoiding. And it's precisely that material which keeps you from really resting and being awake. So this is in this creating this very unstructured environment and giving you plenty of opportunity to encounter those monsters, yes.
If one is lucky enough to rest in attention for the short period, how do you know when the end of the short period is?
Pardon?
When I have this experience of resting in attention, it just dissolves after a while and I really don't have an internal calming.
Can you tell? Can you tell when it dissolves?
No.
Then stop. Start again. Or you can stop. You can just do it for a short period of time, and stop before it dissolves, and then start again. I know it's really hard. You know, because you have to be. I mean, how much patience do you have to? When you started doing this retreat, our retreat teacher didn't let us meditate for more than a minute at a time. It just drove us nuts.
Really?
Yeah. I want to meditate longer. No, start again. So, the second thing. There are three ways that people are, there is in the Tibetan tradition, which is why I'm trying to directed into this way of practice. There is developing the view and using the view as the basis for practice. And then there's developing the practice which brings you into the view. And then there's developing the view, which brings you into the practice. Now, didn't you just say that? The first, developing the view, is done by study and analysis. And this is like doing all of the Madhyamaka dialectics and things like that, in which you get an intellectual understanding of the view. And on the basis of that, you start practicing. We're not going to use that approach at all, because it's too intellectual. I don't like it. I was having dinner with a friend in Santa Fe, brought his girlfriend along, who's going to do a retreat, and said, all the analytical, and said, what kind of retreat? So it's actually about a mudra retreat, and we're going to be doing the analytic meditation, at which point I just started banging my head against this idea. So what are you doing that for? Because this is completely useless. It's not completely useless, but 98% useless. It's close to that. Then the second method is you practice, and through the practice you find the view. This is primarily the approach we're going to take. It's the Mahamudra approach, or at least the way I was trained. I'll be giving you, to the best of my ability, quite precise practice instructions. And through this, you'll find yourself, hopefully, experiencing things in one way or another, which probably won't make much sense to your intellectual brain, which you can just quietly put aside and say, take a holiday. But it's a way of experiencing things. And the third one is using some kind of pointing out instruction so people have some experience of the view, and then they use that as a practice. This is primarily the technique used in Dzogchen. I like the Mahamudra approach because it does give you a little bit to work with. But I want to emphasize this is not... the way that we're going to be working is not an intellectual or conceptual way. We'll be using words and concepts in order to communicate. But it isn't, when I ask you, if I ask you such questions, it's like, what is the color of your mind? I don't expect you to run a spectrum analysis, because it's not going to be helpful. Again, one of my favorite quotes these days is from John Audubon. When there's a discrepancy between the book and the bird, believe the bird. Yes?
What is the view?
Oh. That there's no ground to experience. And in a nutshell, that's the view. Nothing exists in its own right. There is no ground to experience. I'll be going through this in more detail around the third or fourth day of the retreat. And the way that I'm describing this, the approach to practice here is this is finding the view through practice. So you're going to practice having no ground, which is profoundly disturbing. This is what you've been dreading, Randy? Yeah. He says with great eagerness. And it's a little disturbing. And so we begin relating to actually having no ground. And then somewhere along the line we may find out this is actually how things are. Then things are really disturbed. Now, there's one thing I want to say, to put this in a larger context, and I probably should have begun here originally. Mm-hmm. How many of you have ever heard this word, Satori? How many of you have had Satori? How many of you think that if you had Satori, it would solve if not all of your problems, then an awful lot of them. Yeah, I mean, we all believe that, right? It's cracked up to be this way. There is an approach in Buddhism which puts an emphasis on having certain experiences. There is a... in fact, and not only that, there's a whole... I think probably in Tibet and in other Asian countries, but certainly in the West, there's a large contingent of people who practice. Practice in order to have certain experiences. And that's what they're aiming for. I think this may have been influenced by acid in the 60s. But the underlying thesis here is that the right experience will save you. Yeah. If I have the right experience, then everything will be clear to me. Well, if you put this in the Buddhist context, you're taking refuge in an experience. That's what you're doing. This is probably not such a good idea. And yet, I see this attitude and approach on a number of websites and in writings of a number of people. The question may arise, why am I doing this? It's almost certainly to arise in some of you over the next 10 days. Well, this is where the larger context is very important. When we look at life, it's not at all clear what it is. In fact, it's very confusing, because on the one hand, we are subject to the laws of biology and physics. That is, if we step off a ledge, the gravity takes over, and there's very little we can do about that. Know, wear a parachute or put on a jet pack or something like that, but those are temporary expedients. You know, we fall. We also need food and for nourishment. If we don't eat or drink, we die, and we're going to die anyway. This is being subject to the workings of biology, so there's that aspect to our experience. And then there's this other aspect, which seems to be takes in a very, very different direction, where, as we were talking about, there's absolutely no ground to anything. Experience seems to arise from nowhere, goes nowhere, isn't anywhere, as we'll talk about a bit more later. And so it seems like even the laws of physics and biology are just experiences which arise, and it all seems very unreal. And we have these two aspects with us all the time. Many people try to avoid this conundrum, and we have on the one hand the materialists who deny the any significance to those experiences of no thingness and non-self, etc., etc., and say, you know, we're just creatures of matter, and so that's how we should live, and things actually exist. And then we have the idealists who say, no, all of that's simply appearance, and what is true is this emptiness. And this debate has been going on for several thousand years. The fact is that the materialists occasionally have these experiences and it completely blows their mind. It upsets their world. And the idealists die like everybody else. So one could look at this as another opportunity to practice the middle way. It's neither one nor the other. We're both. So then the question is, okay, what do I do? Well, there are various answers to that that have been developed over the ages. My own answer to that comes out of actually two streams of thought. One is bodhicitta and all of the teachings connected with that, and the other is Taoism. On the bodhicitta side, and these aren't unrelated, but it's those two streams of thought that come together for me. On the bodhicitta side, we have to relate to this experience we call life. We can't ignore the laws of physics and biology. In particular, we encounter other people and we interact with them. Despite our best efforts, we seem to have to do that. Calorie Boucher, my own teacher, went off into the mountains to practice. And he was quite happy to do that. You know, very occasionally coming to town and getting a bag of something and maybe for another 6 months or a couple of years or whatever. But then he got this letter from the head of Papal Monastery in the East, in Eastern Tibet, saying, please come and teach the three-year retreat. And as I said, well, I was quite happy in the mountains, so I ignored that. This is like getting a letter from the Archbishop of the diocese or something like that. Or a cardinal, more like a cardinal. And so then he got another letter. This is from someone who had much closer connection with the Papal Monastery, number two of the Papal Monastery, saying, please come down and teach a three-year retreat. So I ignored that letter too. Then he got a letter from his own teacher, who was a pretty wrathful guy, and he said, you're very welcome to stay in the mountains, but if you do so, never darken my doorstep again. And Ricochet told me this himself. He said, so I have to leave. So even he couldn't avoid dealing with people. So you have to deal with people. And the big thing here is that this is where the ethic of compassion comes in. Compassion governs. It's the only way to interact with this experience we call life. But in order to be able to interact in a way that doesn't cause suffering, either for ourselves or for others, we have to be extremely precise and skillful in our interactions. And as our understanding of that deepens, we begin to see that this notion of self, from which most of our actions are based, actually prevents us from being skillful in a lot of situations. Says, no, you can't do that because you're you. And you go, but that's the right thing to do. And that other voice is saying, no, no, no. This is important, and that's important, and that's important, no. So it gets in the way. Sometimes it even gets in the way of being able to see what the right thing to do is, very often. So learning how to operate without a sense of self, learning how to be in life without a sense of self. A fixed notion, a belief in that, that's very important. And that's really what Mahamudra and Dzogchen and all of these direct awareness practices are about, is coming to know that, not intellectually, because knowing it intellectually is almost useless, but knowing it experientially. What is that actually like? And how do you operate? How does one function from that? So that's basically why we are here. Now, a lot of people do the subtle little twist that I was referring to earlier. They take these experiences of non-self, etc., as being the goal. They aren't the goal. They are the means by which we come to be able to negotiate life with complete skill and actually negotiate life in the way that we end suffering, which is the purpose of the practice of Buddhism. But it doesn't come because the experience saves us. The experience is actually don't do anything for us except give us a greater range of freedom from which to act. And there's a very, very important irony, and we'll go into this in more detail towards the end of the retreat. The more aware you are, the less choice you have. And as I said earlier, the illusion of choice is simply an indication of a lack of freedom. You like that one? You heard me say that before.
Yeah,
I tried to do that somewhere. And why is this? When you don't see things clearly, you have the idea, well, we could do this, we could do that, you know, there's all sorts of things, ways we could approach the situation. But when you really see a situation clearly, how many options are there? One, sometimes two, very, very rarely are there three. Usually it's just like, if you really see something clearly there, well, that's what has to happen. So the more clearly, when you see things completely clearly, you find you have very, very little choice about what you do. And I mean, it's just like a doctor, when they really see what a person's illness is, there's, you know, and all of the different factors surrounding that illness, etc., there's only one course of treatment. And you can apply that in any area where there's skill. And so what we're doing is learning how to approach life at that level of skill, see things that clearly, so we know simply what needs to be done and whether we are in a position to be able to do it. Having the ability to do it. That's the actual purpose of our engaging these kinds of practices. It isn't to have experiences. Does this make sense to you? Okay, are you all right with this? Has anybody come here really thirsting after experience? I don't know. Any questions so far? Or on that section? Chuck?
What's the difference between insight and acting with
compassion? Insight without compassion. Leave you the possibility of manipulating situations for your own advantage. Because you see deeply into how things work. That's the insight part. Mm-hmm. But compassion, you're not relating to the suffering that may be present in that. So your own agenda can run. Okay? Compassion without insight can be clumsy and even tyrannical.
Even what?
Tyrannical. Tyranny. Is that the right term? Tyrannical? Okay,
like a parent over punishing their child.
Well, you have an idea of what helps and you impose it. So it may not be punishing a child, it may be like the International Monetary Fund convinced that the best thing for a country is austerity measures and thus reducing, for instance, the case of Argentina, a very flourishing economy to poverty in 10 years, which is actually no small achievement. But that's exactly what the International Monetary Fund was able to do by imposing these austerity measures. You know, oh, you got a little trouble, then you can borrow the money from us, but you have to do X, Y, and Z. And the result has been just devastation of the Argentinian economy. Thinking they were doing the right thing. So, without really seeing what it is, and that's why you have to be able to see very, very clearly, and the sense of self is one of the things that gets in the way of being able to see clearly, is you're coming from your own perspective and not how things actually are. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Other questions? Yes, Karen.
Are you asking us to completely give up our regular practice?
Ah, good point. If you have a regular practice, then use one of the practice sessions, like a half hour or whatever you need to do that, so you keep that going. Yes, thank you for reminding me about that. Yes, you should definitely keep your regular practice going. But don't make it the main subject matter. True. Okay. Leslie?
What about movement practices that we already have?
You should have find time in the schedule to be able to do that. I mean, you've got all the time in the morning and all the time in the afternoon. What kind of movement practices do you need?
Running and yoga.
Okay, yeah. And that's fine. See how you do with the running. Take it easy in the beginning because you're at altitude here. What altitude's conquering?
I'm not 100% sure, but about half, I think.
Yeah. It's going to be in the 90s, or the high 80s, 90s, 90 for the next week or so. I don't know what it is after that. So make sure you drink water. But the area in the guest house, the common area, is where you can practice yoga. Just do it in a way that you aren't disturbing others. That's all. Or other movement exercises. In the past, we've had movement movement practice as part of the retreat, but the person who does that has done that in the last three or four retreats isn't here. So we're not sure what we're going to do about that. So. But and that's one of the reasons I'm going to be doing the Qigong to help with that. But
are you going to do any Tai Chi?
I may do Tai Chi like at 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon. I haven't taught it before, but I've been practicing like for 20 years now. It's part of my, that's the movement practice that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be helpful to people to do that, so.
Two questions. You said back to reading. You said the not to read much, but what about the book?
Yeah, because there's not a lot to read there.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's very nice. You see, now you can read all of this that you want.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You see, you know. There isn't that much to read, but I'll be going over this section by section. I suggest you just reread the sections that I go over, because this isn't really about study. This is the purpose of this retreat, from my point of view, is to let your mind rest, and so you know, go for a walk. But as you go for a walk, let your mind rest. You know, sit on the deck and look at the scenery, watch the trains, watch the clouds, rest. So, I mean, and I'm quite serious about this. This isn't about learning new stuff intellectually. I'm not least bit interested in you doing that. And what I am interested in you is making full use of this time that we have together so that you're actually learning how to rest, which is kind of different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess the second part, which was about writing.
Journaling? Ditto for reading.
I'm sorry?
Ditto for reading. It's the same kind of thing.
Oh, ditto, you say?
Yeah, minimum.
Okay.
Because when you're writing, you're engaging the mind in a certain way.
Yeah.
It's not resting.
Yeah, but...
I'll tell you what, I'll make a deal with you. You get 3 sentences.
Okay?
Yeah. where it starts.
No,
you hit a P. That's what you're doing. This is a P. This is the P at the bottom of the mattresses.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're running into. And you're going to run into a lot of them. And you're going to be very black and blue. Like the princess in the story. Because this may be the first time you've actually considered actually resting this way. Like doing nothing. It's a 10-day retreat. I did a 3-week retreat in Dzogchen, several years ago, which was like this. It was actually even more unstructured than what we're doing here. Considerably more unstructured. We only had one meditation instruction. It consisted of two words. Do nothing. And I lasted about 14 days. And then I started to get quite itchy. But it was a very, very deep, very, very good retreat. But really doing nothing. I didn't read at all. Didn't write at all. Didn't do any of this. Nothing.
Well, that was sort of my question about the movement.
Yeah.
How the yoga practice I do is a flow yoga. So how honest can I be with myself that I'm resting when it's moving quite a lot?
Well, I'll introduce a perspective for you. I don't want to give you everything tonight. I'll just give you this much.
Mm-hmm.
This would be a good start for you, Leslie. Explore how to do your movement yoga without moving. Good start.
Okay.
That's an exploration.
Okay.
So you start doing the exercises, but how do you know what is moving? It's an exploration.
Okay.
So how do you do this without anything being in motion? That'll be quite interesting exploration. Okay. Other questions?
Were you going to say more about sky gazing?
Yes, but not. I don't want to go into it too much tonight. I mean, if you want to practice sky gazing, then just look at the sky. Do not look in the direction of the sun. When I first came out here, because I was scouting it for Dzogchen retreat, I was very happy because this is on the north side of the mountain, but the sun's pretty high in the sky, so it's not ideal. That's what I was suggesting in the morning. The sun will be over there, so if you have there's some slopes over there which are facing to the west, then you'll be able to just lie back and look at the sky. There's some chairs out on the deck over there. They don't have good long chairs for it. Talk with me about that. But you just look at the sky and you put your mind, your eyes right in the sky, and just rest on that. And I'll go into it in more detail later, but that'll be enough for tomorrow. Anything else to go over? What time have we got? 5:15. Okay. I think that's everything.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.